Hello, and welcome to the History of the Early Church, Episode 27, Origen, the Later Years. Having established a Christian academy, tutored the two most prominent Cappadocian bishops, pushed biblical scholarship to a new zenith, and now about to enter his 60s, one might think that Origen would start to retire from public life and begin preparing to repose in the Lord. But Origen, as we have seen, was not like most men, and the 240s AD would prove to be as eventful as the earlier decades of his already eventful life. In these 10-odd years or so, Origen would continue in his role as presbyter and professor, as well as combating heretics, intervening in church councils, writing to the Roman Emperor and Empress, and authoring one of the most important apologetic works in the early church. Despite his well-deserved reputation as a great intellectual and debater, other Orthodox thinkers did not always agree with Origen. A notable example was the Christian polymath Julius Africanus. He and Origen engaged in a friendly exchange over the authenticity of the story of Susanna, a portion of the Book of Daniel found in the Greek Septuagint, but not in the Hebrew Aramaic text. For those of you not familiar with the story of Susanna, I will quickly summarize. The story is set in the 6th century BC, during the Babylonian exile of the Jews. Two Jewish elders, appointed as judges for the Jewish community in Babylon, plot to seduce a noble Jewish woman named Susanna. After finding her bathing in a garden, the judges accost her as she prepares to leave, claiming they will have her arrested and condemned to death for having an affair with a boy in the garden, a crime they will both testify to as witnesses. The only way she can be spared is if she sleeps with the two of them. Susanna refuses to be blackmailed, but has no further recourse. But then the prophet Daniel arrives, and, receiving direct divine inspiration, intervenes on her behalf. He cross-examines the two judges separately, asking which tree in the garden Susanna had been under when she supposedly had the affair. Their answers are different, and as a result, Susanna is cleared of all charges. The two elders are executed, and Daniel gains recognition from the Jewish people. Africanus pointed out how the story was a later addition and not part of the original book. His arguments to support this, which modern biblical scholars have validated, were as follows. In the rest of the book, Daniel always prophesizes from visions and dreams, never direct inspiration. The alliteration in the Greek text for the names of the trees in the garden would not work in Hebrew, only in Greek. The story quotes from other Israelite prophets. Finally, overall, Susanna is clearly of a different style. Origen responded, not quite so successfully, with a longer letter. He disputed that the style was different and that the puns and alliteration could not work in Hebrew, based off his own interactions with Jews. Further concerning Jews, Theodotion had included Susanna in his Greek translation of Daniel. But nevertheless, yes, Origen conceded, Susanna was not in the Jewish version of the Old Testament. But after all, neither were the chapters about Bel and the dragon and the hymn of the three ewes. The reason the Jews omitted Susanna, Origen suspected, was because the story portrayed Jewish leaders in a negative light, so the rabbis only handed the story down orally. At the heart of the matter was Origen's main reason for accepting the story as canonical. Susanna was part of the traditional Septuagint Greek text used by the church, and it was not the place of Christians to remove from the Bible what had been handed down to them. Though devoted to biblical scholarship, Origen was also a man of the church. Origen was to find himself in another, far less cordial dispute with his fellow Catholics. I discussed in episode 23 that one of the points of controversy concerning Origen's theology was the allegation that he claimed the devil could or would be saved. This charge resulted from an exchange Origen had had with an Alexandrian Christian at Ephesus, while he was traveling across the East in the 240s. The Alexandrian completely misrepresented the great scholar by composing a largely fictitious transcript of their debate. What Origen had actually taught was that Satan was damned because of his free choice to oppose God, not that he was predestined to Gehenna on account of his nature. But the unsympathetic bishop of Alexandria, Heraclius, was ready to accept another accusation of heresy against his former teacher. When the Alexandrian informed his bishop, the Egyptian primate wrote to Fabianus, the bishop of Rome, in an attempt to have Origen firmly condemned. After all, Pontianus had supported Demetrius back in the 230s, so it stood to reason Rome would side with Alexandria again. Heraclius also attempted to depose a certain Ammonius, bishop of Thumis in the Nile Delta. Ammonius had harbored Origen during his flight from Egypt when Demetrius condemned him. On the pretext of harboring a false teacher, Heraclius tried, unsuccessfully, to depose Ammonius. Origen, for his part, knew that he needed to gain wider support for his position. He wrote letters defending himself to his few remaining friends in Alexandria, his patron Ambrosius, and his friend Firmilian in Cappadocia, along with other leading clergy. He also wrote directly to Fabianus. The case against him concerned not only the salvation of the devil, but also his foundational book on first principles, which most clearly articulated his highly controversial doctrine of the preexistence of souls. Origen asserted that the book was a private work, never intended for publication. Some later sources claim that it was Ambrosius who Origen accused of publishing On First Principles, and as a result, Ambrosius fell out with Origen and left nothing to his client in his will. I am personally skeptical of this because it is omitted in Eusebius and comes from later sources, and also because the evidence suggests Ambrosius was still supporting Origen in 248 when he commissioned him to write the Contra Celsum. More on that later. In the end, the controversy blew over because in 247, Heraclius died and was succeeded by Dionysius, head of the catechetical school and another student of Origen. Dionysius did not wish to continue the conflict, and the entire matter was dropped. Although Origen never returned to Alexandria, Dionysius was not actively hostile to him like his predecessors had been. While his relations with the churches of Rome and Alexandria were cold, Origen continued to hold good standing in Anatolia and the Levant. In his debates against heretics, Origen was invited by local bishops to church councils in Rome and Arabia, no less than 3 times. In all 3 cases, he managed to convince the accused heretics to change their minds and embrace orthodoxy, which is a pretty remarkable feat when you think about it. These councils and change of minds not only testify to the general esteem Origen was held in across the East, but even the esteem bishops held him in. In one case, we actually have a transcript of the proceedings which clearly show the deferential attitude the Arabian bishops paid to Origen. The first of these 3 councils concerned one Bar-Eulis, the bishop of Bostra, modern-day Basra in Jordan, the Roman capital of Arabia. Bar-Eulis held to a sort of adoptionist Christology, where Jesus did not pre-exist his earthly state, and his divinity was merely an indwelling of God the Father, like a prophet or holy man. Origen managed to expose this error, and Bar-Eulis returned to the Orthodox fold. The second Arabian synod he attended dealt with a group of Christians who believed that the soul was mortal and decayed and died like the body. Again, Origen was able to convince these people to change their minds and believe the Orthodox teaching that the soul did not die with the body and continued to exist after death. The third and final Arabian synod Origen attended and the one we have the aforementioned transcript of, concerned a certain Heraclides. Because the beginning of the dialogue is lost, it is not entirely clear what heresy Heraclides held to, but it appears to have had similarities to that of Berulus, in that it was a monarchianism of sorts. However, Heraclides appears to have favored the modalist monarchianism, or Sabellianism, as it was being known, which clashed most decisively with Origen's own Trinitarian theology, which emphasized the distinction between the Father and the Son. After bringing Heraclides over to his side, the floor was open for questions, and the bishops began to ask Origen his thoughts on various topics. The last heresy Origen dealt with in Roman Arabia was the sect of the Alcesiites, followers of Alcsai, an obscure Judaizing sect which arose during the reign of Trajan. The exact nature of its beliefs are unknown, but it appears to have enforced some degree of Torah observance and a belief in the femininity of the Holy Spirit, among other things. Although mentioned by a few other early church writers, the Alcesiites would probably have been left to the dustbin of history had Eusebius not stated that the great scholar combated them. The province of Arabia had proved an eventful one for Origen. Not only was he busy there as a corrector of heresy, but it was also the place where he was first approached positively by the Roman state. During his earlier years, the governor had asked Origen to be sent to him to discuss religion. Origen's final positive encounter with the Roman state also had a connection to Arabia. The last emperor we discussed was Maximinus Thrax. He died in the civil war of 238, known as the Year of the Six Emperors. Emerging from this conflict was the boy emperor Gordian III, who reigned until his mysterious death in 244. Succeeding Gordian was his praetorian prefect, Marcus Julius Philippus, or Philip the Arab. Philip originated from the Romano-Arab village of Shaba, southeast of Damascus. He would reign for a mere 5.5 years before, like so many other 3rd-century emperors, dying in a civil war against a rival claimant to the throne. Philip's reign is known to students of Roman history for his celebration of the 1,000th birthday of the city of Rome. But for students of church history, his reign is most notable for two reasons: the fact that Origen wrote letters addressed to both Philip himself and his wife, and because of the speculation that Philip was actually a Christian. To take the former first, Eusebius states that Origen addressed letters to both the emperor and the empress. Unfortunately, no context is given in Eusebius as to why Origen wrote these letters. Whether or not the imperial couple ever received them or interacted with Origen is unknown. However, given Origen's previous contacts with the imperial government, it would not be surprising if the emperor or his wife initiated the contact or were receptive of Origen's letters. This leads to the other area of contact between Philip and the church. Was he actually, 70 years before Constantine, the first Christian Roman emperor? The story, as reported by Eusebius, has Philip, after his ascension, attempting to gain admittance into a church during the last night of the Easter Vigil. The local bishop, however, refused him admittance until he made an open confession and joined those in the assembly who were doing penance, on account of the various charges being brought against Philip. Probably the accusation that he had murdered his predecessor Gordian to become emperor. Philip agreed and was allowed in. Eusebius relates the story in a cautious way, suggesting he was hesitant about its veracity. The only other evidence that could possibly corroborate this account is a later tradition which places the event in Antioch and names the bishop as Babylas, whose tenure is dated to 237 to 251. If this account is an independent tradition, and not simply a later embellishment of Eusebius, then it adds some plausibility to the story. Philip became emperor probably in February of 244, near the Roman border with Persia. Hence, a stop at Antioch in the spring of that year, when Easter would have been taking place, fits the known chronology. But at best, he was sympathetic to the church. There's no evidence he was baptized, made Christianity a legal religion, or gave up his pagan duties as emperor, the prime example being the ceremonies, sacrifices, and games celebrating the 1000th birthday of Rome. In spite of Philip's millennial games, though, the Roman Empire was still in dire straits. Near-constant civil war had not abated, the economy was declining as Roman coinage was being devalued to the point of worthlessness. On the borders of the empire, the Persian king Shapur was still on the aggressive, and a new group of Germanic barbarians had begun to raid in the Balkans, the Goths. The Goths, a Germanic tribal confederation from the modern Ukraine, will come to play a long and important role in both the history of Rome and the history of the early church. Origen was not unaware of this crisis, and he understood how easily persecution could descend upon the church as a result. For his part, the great scholar was ready to die for his Lord, but his congregation was not. Origen lamented how many lay people had become more concerned with earthly matters than salvation. Since the church had entered into the societal mainstream during the Severan Age, it had been growing lax with its newfound toleration. Origen would have none of it. He was the son of a martyr. He had seen his students in Alexandria martyred, and had seen his friends Firmilian and Ambrosius endure persecution. Despite his efforts, though, when the first empire-wide persecution did come, the church was largely unprepared, and the result was a disaster for Christianity. But that is for another day. This haunting atmosphere was not lost on Origen's patron. Ambrosius asked Origen to write a refutation of the book On True Doctrine by the pagan philosopher Celsus. We discussed Celsus and his critique of Christianity back in episode 17. Now, 70 years later, a Christian intellectual set himself to the task of refuting the pagan attack. And not just any intellectual, but the great scholar himself. Next episode, we will discuss the Contra Celsum, or Against Celsus, and then conclude our account of Origen with an examination of his theological legacy. Thank you for listening. If you have any questions or feedback about the podcast, you can email me at historyoftheearlychurch@gmail.com. Please don't forget to leave a review on iTunes, post a comment on the Facebook page, facebook.com/earlychurchpodcast, and don't forget to visit the website at historyoftheearlychurch.wordpress.com.